Talk. Cape Talk Late Nights with Sarah Jane King.
Live.
Online. Smartphones.
DSTV.
Channel 885. And on 567 Medium Wave.
5 minutes past midnight. Welcome back. I'm Sarah Jane King and this is Late Nights on Cape Talk. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. Now, one of the most important and self-loving things that we can do as human beings is to live according to our own truth. But for some of us, that isn't always possible. Now, these days, my next guest lives his truth as a gay man, but Rick Clements hasn't always felt able to be open about his sexuality. For 13 years, he was married to a woman. They've got two daughters, but one day made the decision that he could no longer live outside his authentic self, and he came out as gay. Rick is the author of Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay, host of the Coming Out Lounge podcast, and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. And I'm delighted to welcome Rick to the show to talk about some of the difficulties and challenges facing members of the LGBT community when coming out later in life. Rick, welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you on.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here too.
Oh, dulcet tones coming through my headphones. Lovely. Good. So you came out at what age?
I came out at like 36.
Okay. Now, given that, and I think this is a great thing, that these days I hope we are becoming less prejudiced and less bigoted and less ignorant. But certainly in terms of friends of my age, I'm like 38. Their coming out didn't happen as teenagers, certainly. For most of them, it was kind of early 20s, maybe mid 20s. But these mm-hmm. days, and I'm encouraged by this, and I hope it's reflective of where we are generally in society as not being ignorant, is that I know that a lot of teenagers, younger people are coming out a lot earlier, are feeling safer to come out a lot earlier. What was your experience? What was it that meant that you didn't feel able to live in your truth until 36?
Well, there was several things that actually showed up for me. First of all, I had a very faith-based family that I was raised in. I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, which is rather constrictive in many ways, as are many religions, especially when it comes to this homosexuality thing. And then there was just a lot of my own immaturity as a man. I hadn't really had any huge dating experiences. I mean, I dated a few girls in high school, didn't really date anyone in college. And I did come out to my parents at age 19. But in that moment, there was a lot of, no, you can't be this. You shouldn't be going against God's will. And I wasn't strong enough in myself to stand up for who I knew I was. And I actually feel very blessed that I actually didn't follow through at that point in time, because this was 84, 85, somewhere in that range when I came out to them. And it was right in the height of the AIDS crisis. Sure. When nobody really knew what it was. You know, it was like, okay, we know this thing is happening. And being as naive and immature as I was sexually, as well as emotionally and maturely, I mean, again, I was a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. Some people would say, oh, you're mature. Yeah, I was mature, but some of that stuff was still very foreign to me. I'm not sure you and I'd be having this conversation today if I had followed my path right then and there.
Wow. Sure. Interesting. So coming out to your parents at age 19, and you say that they were religion was quite a big part of your family life. What was that immediate response from them? Do you remember that conversation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. I actually was in university about 800 miles away from home. And at that time, you know, we were using payphones to communicate. Yeah. We didn't have all the lovely technology we have today. And I just remember the silence on the end of the phone. And literally the next thing is, well, you know, you can't be that because that's not what God wants for you. So we will get you some help. And they did. I went and I spent some time with the pastor at the church at our college.
Must have been helpful. That must have been a treat.
And yeah, that was interesting to say the least, because, you know, it's kind of tough to sit there and go, okay, I'm going to be healed and fixed and everything, and you're sitting there looking at the pastor going, well, he's very attractive and he's very hot, you know, and it just didn't work, you know. And but yet I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't who I needed to be. And I literally kind of walked back into the closet and said, okay, if this is the way it's supposed to be, then I will make this work. And finished college, was barely out of college a year and a half, and met the woman that would become my wife and the mother of my children. And I thought, okay, we can make this work. And all along, it wasn't working. It was not
It was not my truth. It was not who I was. I knew it in my heart and soul. But as many people that I now work with, as I do this as a profession of helping people come out of the closet, I hear this story over and over and over again. Well, you just start to live a dual life and you just figure this is what you're supposed to do. You live a dual life. You have these other liaisons on the side, whether they just be friendships or they move further. And then you just go home and you do what you're supposed to do. And I know we've all heard these stories many, many times, especially here in the US and I'm sure in South Africa too, where people just hide this stuff. And then one day, as it did for me, the reality sets in of, I can't do this. I literally cannot do this any longer. It is killing me.
I am so fascinated by this on a number of levels. First of all, when you met your now ex-wife, and you said, I can make this work. Did you know going in 100%, I'm gay, but I like this woman, you know, I maybe even love her. But I'm going to have to just, in order to not fall apart, essentially, I'm going to have to now live a life where I live as a straight man married to this woman, and I will just keep it from her, and I will just live with the secret inside of me, and I'll be able to do it.
For me, it wasn't so much I knew I was gay. I knew I was attracted to men, right, but I never had any trouble being attracted to women, nor having, you know, sex with my wife.
Right.
I still find women very beautiful.
Yeah.
In fact, I wouldn't say I'm on the bisexual spectrum. Some of my gay friends would say you are. I say I'm more attracted to men, but there's never out of the realm of possibility that if the right woman happens in the right circumstances, that something could happen. It's not what I go pursue.
No, but you know what, Rick? I think if everyone was honest about themselves and everyone had some self-reflection, they would all start ending up with, you know, agreeing with Kinsey that we're all on a spectrum. Mm-hmm. I genuinely believe that to be true.
And
I think that people would be horrified, and then there's going to be people who say, I can't even comprehend. That's not true. I'm not even remotely gay. Well, you probably are a little bit gay. You probably are, you know, a little bit straight. You're going to be a little bit gay.
You're right, Sarah. You know, and it's so interesting. I just got back from the gym here, and I'm in California. So for those of you in South Africa listening, they're like, well, this guy's at the gym at midnight. No, I'm actually at the gym, you know, in the middle of the day over here in the US. But it was so interesting because one of the trainers was working with one of his clients, and the client was obviously gay because he's like talking to his trainer about the guys he's finding attractive and everything in the gym. I was kind of like laughing to myself. But even the trainer's like, well, you know, I guess I kind of get it. And the gay guy said, well, think about it. You guys, straight men, you look at guys and you admire, you know, their biceps, their triceps, their calves, whatever, because you want to look like them.
Yeah.
So don't say it's so far out of the possibility.
Absolutely.
I realize there's a whole different layer that happens in sexuality because I know I've been through it. I do this work daily with people.
But, yeah.
It is a very interesting journey. And when this happened for me, the piece that happened was I was in London. I met a guy in a bar. A lovely Brit.
Which bar? Which bar?
I can't even remember. It's been so many years ago at this point. I do remember we went to heaven. I do remember we went to heaven.
Of course you did.
There. Of course.
What else would you do in London as a gay man?
Yeah, exactly. What else would you do, right? And so I met this guy. I was on a business trip. And we went to his hotel room.
Ooh.
And there was no sex.
Oh.
And we spent the night together. And I really connected, and that was when the light bulb went off. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what I thought I couldn't have. I didn't think I could have like anything but just, you know, random sex hookups with someone. But this was conversation, this was connection, this was like really getting to know someone. And that's when I realized, oh, all this BS that I'd been hearing all my life about, you can't have real love. You can't have connection. Two men can't do this. Yada, 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 yada. It all just snowballed in literally less than, you know, a 8-hour night.
I'm fascinated by... I'm fascinated by what you said then. And it's not something that's ever kind of... I've never even thought about this in terms of like my gay friends or being a thing. But that you came to a realization which challenged your preconceived idea of... this is not something I could ever have. I've never even thought about that. So you genuinely believed that you would not, it was not possible to have anything beyond a physical attraction or a sexual relationship with another man. You didn't think that you could have a soul connection with another man.
No, no. And that's because that's what I'd been told.
Yeah.
That's what I'd been taught. That's what society had said. This is an abomination.
Yeah,
this is
Sodom and Gomorrah. Normal. Yeah.
It's all sexual. And what's so interesting, Sarah, is my dad's oldest brother was gay, and I was around him and his partner who were together for.
Oh, well, that's where you caught it from.
We have years.
And that's obviously where you got it from.
I actually witnessed everything. I saw everything. Well, okay, I didn't walk in their bedroom and go, "Oh, look, this is how this does," right?
Yeah.
But I saw the relationship, and even through that, and when my uncle passed away from AIDS, he and I had a brief conversation, and he said to me, "Just remember, you have a choice."
Sure.
And he goes, "Just take those words in, Rick." So I knew he knew at that point. He knew who I was at that point in time.
Wow.
And I took that and I thought, interesting. Took it in because this was college time still.
Yeah.
And it was when I finally came out, I thought, now I really get what he meant. I have a choice to live my truth or to not live my truth.
Yeah.
Which is everything. It's everything I do with people. I don't just coach people coming out of the closet in sexuality. Now I speak on stages and I talk about this on, you know, with clients who are, I think I really want to leave my job because I'm so miserable. And okay, well, you're about to go on a coming out journey because you're about to leave everything that everybody tells you, go do this, be this, this is what you're supposed to do in life, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating because the journey to come out is everyone's journey, no matter what that closet is that you're in.
Yeah. You know, I love that you speak about coming out as a journey because I've never experienced in my life as the friend of anybody coming out that they just wake up one morning and go, okay, I'm coming out. And then everyone either goes, oh my goodness, how awful, we're all going to die. Or they go, oh great, okay. And then everyone just gets on with it. That's not how it happens. And in fact, my best friend, who's gay, I remember him, you know, we've been best friends since yay high, and his coming out journey has been many, many years. And now the man that I, you know, that I stand in front of and who I call my best friend and who is marrying his partner in San Francisco in just a few months time, that the man that I look at today is so far from the 12-year-old boy that I knew as hiding something. There was something going on. I mean, I think I always knew, but I mean, I don't think I had words for it then, but there was something going on. And then going through the coming out, his actual sort of I'm coming out, the rejection that he experienced, the kind of crazy promiscuity that he went through, that a lot of my gay friends have also went through, in a kind of search for identity and belonging and gay clubs and whatever. Yep. And to now the point where, you know, we're both old and he's getting married. So it's been a really depressing. It's been a really fascinating journey.
It's a beautiful search. It's a beautiful search. Yeah. And that you're so right, Sarah, because, you know, this is not something that ends. I mean, here I am, you know, it's, you know, past midnight in Cape Town. I'm, you know, mid-afternoon in California. I'm coming out again. I'm coming out on the radio in Cape Town.
Yeah.
To a whole bunch of new listeners. This is a never-ending journey. But if you think and put this in parallel with your life, to something that, you know, somebody has said you can't be or you can't do that, or you know, I heard you talking about, you know, you're not a parent.
Yeah.
You know, some people could take that and go, oh, well, she should be a parent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a coming out thing in and of itself. And I know you get it, because people who think, oh, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I kind of gathered you're older and you haven't had a child yet. Oh my gosh, people just, like, you know, they freak out. You have bent the societal
100%.
You know, standards.
Yeah.
Da, you know? So this is why I get so, as you can tell, I get really jazzed about talking about this, because coming out is coming out. It's life. It's what we are. And I feel so privileged and proud to be a gay man who is a flag bearer for people in the world to see that, yes, coming out is a journey, but it's a beautiful journey to yourself. And if other people would pick up that flag and say, I'm no longer going to do this just because somebody else tells me I have to do this, I'm going to come out and I'm going to be who I am, who my truth is. Man, you feel so much better, and you love life so much more.
You know what? Living in one's truth, and I've discovered this myself in the past, I'm going to say 5 years, for different reasons, but for, you know, to live in one's truth is the most incredibly powerful, empowering, freeing, liberating thing. It is so wonderful to be able to be one's authentic self. If you've been told for however many years that your authentic self or isn't good enough or isn't wanted or isn't, you know, isn't going to fit in, to finally be, to get to a point. And as you said, it is a journey where you can say, this is who I am. And I don't care what you think about it. I don't care if you're appalled by who I am. That is entirely your choice, but it's not going to stop me from living my truth. That said, Rick, it can't have been difficult that when you get back from London, having spent the night in a hotel room with this guy, you've then got to tell your wife. How did that go?
It was one of the toughest things I've ever done. In fact, from the LAX airport. So I lived in California, Southern California at the time. Mm. I lived in Orange County. Guess where the Orange County housewives were. and it's about a good hour and a half drive from the airport. And I called her when I landed and said, hey, I'm on my way home and looking forward to seeing you. But we definitely need to talk about something. Oh. And as soon as I said that, I'm like, why did I do that? But I'm like, oh, it's okay. And then I got in the car and there were like four times in my rear view mirror, I saw semi trucks. I'm like, it would be so easy. Yeah. It would just be so easy to just turn the wheel and just, you know, not do this. Mm. And it wasn't easy. I walked in and I thought, you know, I can't let this go. I can't do this any longer. And it was hard. I actually ended up getting there, telling her and leaving that night, just to give it some space more than anything. And stayed away for a few days, then came back. And then we tried to work through some stuff. And then we started doing some counseling and therapy just to, you know, work through the relationship ending sort of stuff. And I was an asshole. I have to be honest. I was an asshole at the very beginning in a way that I never saw, because there was a piece of me that it's like, okay, I finally get to be myself. And this guy had swept me off my feet. And I did some really stupid things, and then my head got put back on. So this all happened starting in October. I went to see him for Thanksgiving weekend here in the States in San Francisco, because he was actually from San Francisco. And then by January, it was over. And that was the first wake up call. I'm like, okay, I've experienced what I knew I need to experience. So I know I can go find it. And then I went through a string of guys that I had to go through because I had to learn. I had to learn the ones who had, I tried dating a guy who was in my shoe. Actually, I tried dating two guys who'd been in my shoes, one who had a really bad breakup with his wife, one who was simultaneously going through. And, you know, it's like, no, those didn't work. They just didn't work. The similarity thing wasn't going to work. Then I dated a couple of guys who didn't have kids. One I thought was going to make it work. Nope, that didn't work because the kids were too much of an issue for them. And then I met my guy. And we've now been together going on 17 years. We've been married a little over 3 years now. And it's a whole different thing. And, you know, back to the truth thing, Sarah, one of my favorite, in fact, just about every episode when I do wrap up my podcast, which we've now expanded, it's changed from the Coming Out Lounge to Life on Closet.
Yes, I saw that there'd been bigger stories.
And so that's just recent. But one of the quotes you try to almost always end with is, the truth of who you are is far more powerful than the false truth of who you're pretending to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And I think everyone who's listening, if you really think about this, it doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, you know, whether you're miserable in your career or you want to be an entrepreneur or whatever it is, the moment you step into your truth is when you frickin' thrive. That is when you fly. Now, it may not be easy. I'm not saying it is. By no stretch of the imagination was what I went through easy. But when you finally start to go get your stride and you're like, yes, I'm living who I am, so much in life begins to flow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you've got two daughters. What ages were they when you came out?
My youngest was 9 months old and my oldest was about 4.5 years old.
So small. So very, very. Very, very small. Yeah. So presumably, in terms of your presence in their lives, they've only ever known daddy as being with men.
Yep.
Really?
Pretty much. My oldest one remembers mom and dad a little bit. My youngest one, and this is one of my heartfelt regrets, is she has no recollection of mom and dad ever having lived together, even though for the first, you know, 9 months old, hello.
Why do you
Nobody
regret
remembers
that?
Anything, you know. just because I feel like I almost slighted her, and it's just one little nugget of guilt that I carry every, and it only shows up every once in a while.
Mm.
She's like, "Let it go, Dad.
Yeah,
I'm 19. Get over it, man." You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess because I had a tough childhood, and I swore I would never do that to my kids. And I think if you ask both of them, they're like, guess what, Dad? You didn't.
Yeah.
You've been really great. And I hand it to my husband because he's been really great. And even to my ex-wife.
How do you get on with your ex-wife?
That's a good question. Up until about a couple of years ago, we were doing really, really well. And then some life stuff happened with the kids and some differences came up around parenting and
But anything to do with your sexuality?
Overall, good. I mean, there were times that, I mean, we literally would go out. My husband, her and I would go out. We've gone out to gay bars together. We've done family vacations together. She didn't have a relationship until just the last couple of years. And we have gone on family cruises together, all this sort of stuff. And she seemed really well.
Rick, was she surprised? Was she surprised when you came out? Or did she have an inkling? I don't know if you ever saw the episode. Sorry to interrupt you. I don't know if you ever saw the episode of Oprah where Terry McMillan went on with her with her ex-husband, Jonathan Plummer, and it was that was gripping viewing. However, I'm not sure that that was a massively good idea for either party in that circumstance. They were both very, very raw, and it was. And as you say, he didn't come off that well, but I think because he was suddenly living his truth, that he seemed a little bit cold to her feelings. She was obviously absolutely livid and couldn't see past it and was sort of flinging out, homophobic slurs left, right and sideways. Maybe not the best idea to go on Oprah after a revelation of that nature. But I remember her saying, and my friends kept saying to me, we always suspected he might be gay, but she never did. Your ex-wife?
Not initially, but then she went through some rehab herself. And one of the rehab exercises that she had to go through was a forgiveness exercise. And I remember walking into that therapy room and I knew what this was all about. Because by then I was already starting to do some of this work. And I knew that clients, a forgiveness exercise is one of the biggest things. And she goes, I just need you to know some things. And she lit into me. And then she kind of subtly dropped something that kind of gave me the indication she kind of knew, but she didn't really want to acknowledge it. And it wasn't my role to push that. I just took what I needed to take and, thanked her for that. I would be really surprised if you could actually get her to open up her heart and be really truthful that she would say, no, absolutely no, I did not know. Cause I think there were some signs. I know over the years there were signs. I'm like, I'm trying. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
I was getting the men's undergear catalog, underwear stuff. And, that I would throw fits if I couldn't find that catalog. That was the extent of my porn at that point in time, so to speak.
But
it is very raw. And, I find it interesting. Right now I've been courted more than a couple times, but two or three times with reality TV shows. And people don't get it. It's like, you're never going to get a family. I shouldn't say never, but I'm pretty much pretty dang sure you're never going to get a family who's going to want this sort of thing to play out in real time on TV because it is too raw. It's too vulnerable.
Absolutely.
It's shameful. It's all of that stuff, and there ain't, in my mind, there's not enough money in the world. Now, as the guest expert coming on, yes, I would love to do this, but there's just too much raw emotions. And I would love to do it only from the perspective of, I want to heal the planet.
Yeah.
And I have said from the moment I started being a coming out coach and getting certified as a coach and saying, this is my direction and throwing myself into sexuality and everything and really trying to understand this, my greatest gift I could ever receive is the morning I wake up and I never have to do this work again.
Sure. Rick, it's been such a pleasure to have you on. We've sadly run out of time, which I am frustrated by, but we would love to have you back on. Just remind us of the name of the podcast.
Yes, it's Life Uncloseted, and you can just find it at lifeuncloseted.com, where we tell all sorts of stories about people coming out of closets, and all the shows from the Coming Out Lounge are there. Everything talking about transsexual people, transgender, coming out, spouses who've come out, spouses who've been the brunt of it. So I'd invite your listeners, if you're struggling, go listen to the podcast. They are, I say they're inspiring. I know I'm a little jaded because I'm the one who does them, but the stories are beautiful.
Wonderful. Rick Clemons, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sarah.